listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Thank you for joining me, and 524-1080 is the number, and we're waiting. Going to have Mr. Jim Anthony, or Dr. Jim Anthony. Coming in with us and joining us. We're going to be talking about LIE, or Envision LIE, as we've been talking quite a bit before about this. And good morning, Dr. Anthony. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Yes, just patching in now, and thanks for joining us. We're going to be talking about the Envision LIE, and I felt that we've talked around it, and we are tempted, and I must clarify, we attempted to, at least through you, in inviting the people from BYU and the people that are proposing the development out there, and they declined to come on air. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so we reached out, and I want our listeners to know that we gave the opportunity, so it's not going to be a one-sided. We attempted. So if you would, just briefly introduce yourself and your involvement and what are your concerns out there, and a little bit of background on the history of the LIE, if you would. Hello?
Yeah. I'm here.
Go ahead. If you would, give us some background on what's the history of the growth issues related to BYU and what have you.
Go ahead.
Dr. Anthony, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Let me try another phone.
Yeah, I think so. Okay,
hang on a second.
Well, we lost him again. He's going to call again. So, anyway, the issue is in Laie. In Laie, there's development being proposed, and many of the people out there are concerned. And what's happening is that there's bigger development. The cities, there's concerns that the city has not been open and transparent about the processing of permits and what have you, if some of you are just joining us. Are you there now, Dr. Anthony?
Yes, I am.
And, okay, we got better. So as I was saying, if you could, give us some of the history of the growth issues out there concerning BYU and Laie and that area, so if you would. And a little bit background on yourself, or introduce yourself.
You want some background?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, just go ahead and tell us what you got out there in Laie. We were stumbling over ourselves right now.
Yeah,
so
this has been going on. The Envision Laie is the latest iteration, the latest version of attempts to develop Laie. This has been going on for about 20 years. I remember 20 years ago, the issue of further developments in Laie surfaced, and at that time, what was at the forefront was the prospective development of so-called affordable housing. One of the interesting things about affordable housing from the very beginning was that no one in the BYU, HRI, PCC hierarchy in Laie has ever mentioned, and still has not mentioned, how much precisely these so-called affordable houses are going to cost. And to this day, there has been no disclosure as to how much affordable housing is going to cost. 20 years ago, when discussions concerning affordable housing surfaced, affordable housing was the issue that was on the front burner. That has now been superseded more recently by an increase in the size of BYU itself. As a matter of fact, I think it's reasonable to argue that what is driving the Envision Laie program is not so much affordable housing, but expansion in the size of BYU itself. When President Shumway, the present president of BYU's predecessor, was in office, he had given a more or less assurance to the public that BYU would not extend beyond its 2,400 student enrollment. What is now being proposed in the Envision Laie plan is almost a doubling of enrollment of BYU, and this is being driven partly because the Mormon Church hierarchy in Salt Lake City has decided that, and has pointed out, I think, quite forcefully to the people on the ground in Laie, that the whole operation, BYU and PCC particularly, which are the big money generators, that the whole operation is apparently running in the red, and so therefore, in order to get out of the red, there must be an expansion in the size of BYU, and I think this also includes an expansion in the size and the services that are going to be given out by PCC. So I think that it's fair to say, if you look at this historically, that that what used to drive developments in Laie was so-called affordable housing. And your listeners should understand that affordable housing, and there is another term now being used, and that term is workforce housing. So if it's going to be workforce housing, that raises certain kinds of issues. If it's going to be affordable housing, I think the public is entitled to know, and especially the people for whom these affordable houses are going to be built. They need to be able to know how much these houses are going to cost, and they still don't know. And the reason why the price of affordable housing is important is that unless prospective buyers of these affordable houses know what the price is going to be, they may end up not being able to afford them, depending on what the price is. One of the things we know about the socioeconomic profile of people who live in live in La'ie, and who work for either PCC or BYU or any of the other Mormon church entities in La'ie, a lot of them are very substantially in credit card debt, and their ability to be able to qualify for a mortgage is something in doubt. Those are some of the peaks of the history concerning the prospective development that have now found their way into what is called Envision La'ie.
Let me ask you, regarding the increasing of the size of the university, is there any rules or state regulations or any process, that formal process they have to go through to do this, to increase, or can they just do it and this objective?
Well, if they're going to make incursions into land that is presently zoned for ag, there's going to have to be a change in zoning, and that means an appearance in full public view before the Land Use Commission. So what is at stake here is the conversion of agricultural lands behind the present site where BYU is located, behind the sewage treatment plant, and lands that the church recently acquired in Malaikahana. Those are all ag lands, and so what's at issue here is the fact that ag lands are going to be imperiled. So the lands that are supposed to produce food, lands that are zoned for agriculture, will have to go before the Land Use Commission for rezoning at some time in the future.
So none of this has taken place, the rezoning?
The rezoning attempt has still not yet been taken place. That's somewhat down the road.
Do you see anything in these actions that would lend themselves to taking, eating away at it, trying to do it behind closed doors, and then when it does go public?
Well, one of the big problems concerning this development project is that the Department of Planning and Permitting at the city level developed a process, fairly well-known, well-known process, not terribly effective, but it was a process, and that process was called the PAC process, the Planning Advisory Council process, and a number of citizens, including representatives of the church entities, were members of that process. It was a large, cumbersome group of people, and about 25 of them. And this process was supposed to be an orderly process that was supposed to be bottom-up. And they met for at least a year, and then they went into hibernation for a year, which is something that was not designed by the PAC itself, but designed by the political pressures which seemed to be in the process of being generated. The PAC process has now been completely sidelined. There was intervention on the part of the new director of planning and permitting, David Tanoe, and he had private meetings with the acknowledged private meetings, by the way, with HRI, which is the real estate arm of the Mormon Church entities in La'ie. And there may have been other people present, possibly the president of BYU, whom we invited to be on this program. And he is the chief spokesman as far as we can ascertain, he's the chief spokesman for the people in La Hia, who has a liaison relationship with the peak of the Mormon Church hierarchy in Salt Lake City. And as a result of those private discussions, the deliberations of the PCC and the decisions that they were about to make, or in fact were leaning towards, they have all been set aside. And so the PAC process has now been completely sidelined.
Mm-hmm. What has the new mayor, Peter Carlisle, has he spoken or voiced an opinion publicly on this?
Well, my view of Peter Carlisle was that he came to office promising to clean up City Hall. I have some doubts in my mind whether he knows what is proposed for La Hia and its implications for the Windward Coast. I don't think he has been adequately briefed. I certainly haven't talked to him. I may make a request to have a talk with him in order to fill him in on a side of this issue that he does not know much about. I think he's leaning very heavily on David Tanoi, on whose behalf he testified very strongly when Mr. Tanoi's appointment was before the City Council. Mm-hmm. I have said publicly that I think that Mayor Carlisle has let the community down after having made lavish promises to defend the public interest, to root out corruption, and so on. So I think that that Mayor Carlisle's extreme dependence and almost exclusive dependence on what Mr. Tanoi is feeding him is unhealthy for public disclosure, mm-hmm, and for reasonable debate.
Mm-hmm. I raise that question because unlike like the rail, we didn't really know where he stood, but as soon as Carlisle got in,
he was
very supportive of the rail and went charging up the hill. So I'm wondering, in the back of my mind, is this yet another one of those charging up the hill? And it's the same people in place, Tanoi and others. He didn't seem to clean house or rename or replace them.
Yeah, one way of looking at a newly elected mayor or a newly elected public official is that we know that how the process works. That newly elected officials tend to surround themselves with people who do not tell them what they should hear, but generally tend to tell them what they think. Will sit well with their newly elected official. I think that Peter Carlisle has that problem, that he surrounded himself with people who tell him what he wants to hear. And one way of, I think, an intelligent leader who is elected to public office and who is really committed to listening to all sides might have said in these circumstances to people in La Hia, and it's no secret who some of the community leaders are and who hold different opinions from the opinion that is being circulated in City Hall at the moment. He might have said to them, hey, listen, I want to know from all sides what is going on. I invite you to come in and have a chat with me. Tell me what your side of the story is. I don't think that's happened yet. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me whether that is likely to happen, I have grave doubts whether that is likely to happen. And if it doesn't happen, which is what I think is going to happen, then the process that is used for public disclosure, for public debate, for energetic discussion, that is truncated, that is cut off. Mm-hmm. And we make poorer decisions in the interests of the present generation and future generations, which is what is at stake on the Windward Coast.
I see. Well, the concern here is that if Tenoy is still in place, and it seems there's a lot of move afoot out there in LIA, things are moving and grinding, as you say, BYU, PCC, HRI, the Temple, and all of those entities are still active. And even if he were to take Tenoy out, it's the underlings, the what are the supervisors in DPP, they've gotten their marching orders. So how are the public to be assured that none of this, that if he were to remove Tenoy, let's say, how would we be assured that the right thing would be done and the right scrutiny given?
I'm not sure that simply removing Tenoy is going to grease the wheels of intelligent public debate and discussion on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a single individual that determines the fate of a decision like this. What determines the fate of an area such as the Windward Coast is Laie, in particular in this instance. Well, Laie and Malaikahana, which is the adjacent Ahupua'a, is a commitment to openness that is real. For example, there has been no discussion so far about carrying capacity. There has been no discussion so far about the future and present needs with respect to food sufficiency and food production and the preservation and the importance of agricultural lands. We have the general plan, which is pretty much a dead letter. We have had no intelligent discussion and no numbers crunched with respect to the costs of widening Kamehameha Highway, which is very likely to be needed in the event that this massive development goes forward. On the subject of the widening of Kamehameha, it is interesting to note that this issue was raised in a meeting that some members of the community had with Mr. Tenoy after he had some of his private meetings with BYU and HRI representatives. And Mr. Tenoy is reported to have said in a very cavalier way that, oh, well, you know, if we're going to widen Kamehameha Highway, then let's widen it. Well, I think that's all very nice,
mm-hmm.
except that doesn't address the crucial question of if we are going to widen Kamehameha Highway in order to accommodate all of this increased traffic in and out of Laie and the Windward Coast in general, who's going to pay for it? And my view is that if the widening of Kamehameha Highway is going to be necessary, and it seems to me that it will be necessary if you go forward with this development, then I would like to see a commitment, an enforceable commitment, with money placed in escrow by the developer, in this case, the Mormon Church entities in Laie, to pay for the widening of Kamehameha Highway if we're going to do that. You know, that would cost probably $1 billion. Property acquisition, widening, traffic interruptions, and all of those things that go into the widening of an important arterial freeway through an area like the Windward Coast. But there is no talk of that. So what happens in this process, Carol, is that the developer might get his way, and then related costs for infrastructure get dumped on the taxpayer. And the mood in this country is, enough already. You do not dump developers' costs on the taxpayer. The taxpayer is overburdened enough. That debate has not taken place yet.
And for the taxpayer, the basic things would be upgrading of the sewage plant, for example, to handle that new capacity, increased trash pickups. You're going to put in traffic lights, traffic signs, and stripping and painting. Who's going to pay for all of that?
Well, if a taxpayer is going to pay for it, I think that's somewhat unfair. That's one of the reasons why we have a taxpayer's revolt in this country. And I think that the infectiousness of the revolt on the mainland hasn't reached Hawaii yet. But there's something else that's another side effect of these infrastructural costs. And that is, if you build new houses, and I don't know whether Envision Lahia's present iteration involves the building of these mysterious things called market houses, because the theory, the relationship of market houses to so-called affordable houses is that the market value houses are supposed to subsidize the costs of so-called affordable housing. But aside from that issue, there is another issue, and that issue is if property values begin to go up as a result of speculation, as a result of more costly housing in the community, as a result of more people buying and selling real estate, that has property tax implications for local people who are not involved in speculation, who are simply caught by the fact that they choose to remain where they are and where they have been for a long time. So that's a big issue. That is an issue that surfaced in Kahuku, for example, when the landowner, I've forgotten their name now, were going to build a string of multi-million-dollar houses on that pristine coastline behind the Kahuku Golf Course. The citizens of Kahuku asked the question, well, if property values go up, how is that going to affect us? And that question never got addressed. I don't think that question is being addressed in the truncated public debate that is occurring in Lahia at this moment. The other thing I think, Carol, you've got to remember is the, and not enough attention has been focused on this, I think the public is entitled to know just exactly what kind of community Lahia is. And I think that one way that you can draw an inference as to whether this is an independent-minded community or whether it is a community that is owned and controlled by these church entities is from the number of people who will turn up at meetings wearing blue shirts. And I think that those people, and I happen to be one of them, who understand something of the ebb and flow of power in the Lahia community, that many of the people in the Lahia community I use this word advisedly, are controlled by church leaders like bishops, for example, and they pretty much do what the church dictates they all have to do. Whether this message is getting through to the leaders in Salt Lake City, the leaders that you have to remember, your listeners have got to understand, and I tread very carefully in this area because I'm talking about a big, very large corporate entity known as the Mormon Church. It is a church. So some of the questions I ask myself is, are the people who run HRI, and a good man that he is, I think, the present president of BYU, who I have been given to understand is the principal liaison person, Steve Wheelwright, between the church entities in Lahia and Salt Lake City. Are they getting the whole story? I don't know. I have doubts that they do, because all of the indications so far, as I read deep into Envision Lahia and the way that it was put together, and the selective information on which it draws, and the issues that it... When you look at a plan, you don't only look at what's in the plan. You need to ask yourself what has been excluded from the plan. That's equally relevant. I'm not sure that Salt Lake City is getting all of the information that it should, and I think that this raises very serious questions about notions of good stewardship of these scarce lands in an imperiled area such as the Windward Coast. I think that if the church leaders, my suspicion is that if the church leaders in Salt Lake City really understood minority sentiment freely expressed, not the sentiments that are contrived and expressed by a captive audience, such as you have a captive clientele, such as you have in Lahia, I'm not sure that the church leaders would accept all that they, the small amount of information that is being conveyed to them. This is an area that is particularly troubling. You know, the British Empire had the same kind of problem, and one of the reasons why it collapsed was that what was really happening on the ground in the colonies never got conveyed to Westminster. And I think what is really happening on the ground, the full panoply of opinion, the full range of opinion, freely expressed by people who live on this side of Oahu, I don't think those views are being transmitted to Salt Lake City. Because I think if they were being transmitted to Salt Lake City, I think people in Salt Lake City, being reasonable men, and I think most of them are men, they would pause a moment and say, hey, you know, some of this stuff doesn't amount to good stewardship. So there is, I think, a reason to believe a serious communication breakdown. I don't believe that Eric Beaver tells his principals in Salt Lake City everything he knows.
Well, let me ask you this, then. Anyone in the Lae community or the groups that are working, and not in opposition, but from the public standpoint, have they written or communicated with the Mormon Church? Have they attempted to?
Well, I think, for example, one small group that is attempting to, in its own sort of fumbling way, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, are Kuleana landowners. Kuleana landowners are going to be impacted by this development. There may be roads that the church plans to put through Kuleana land. That's one example of a small group that has for a very long time tried to communicate its concerns, its sentiments, and its heartache to people in Salt Lake City. And I don't think they're being heard. I think there are other people, I have heard, for example, that there may well be fair-minded people on the faculty of BYU who have concerns. But, you know, they fear for their jobs. That's not new. People who live... And, you know, I want to make this, since there is a... This is essentially an empty chair conversation. I wish that President Wheelwright had joined me in this conversation. But he is not here this morning. I wish I could say that the discussions concerning Envision Laia are open, they are unfettered, that they are drawing on all sectors of opinion who are being welcomed and made comfortable. I don't think that's the milieu in which Envision Laia is being considered in the Windward Coast.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of going back a bit on mortgages, can the people in Laie or afford the mortgages? Or
well, let me tell you this. Some time ago, I got information leaked to me by someone in Laie that a survey had been done by HRI, and one of the stunning things that they found out is that many of the people for whom these houses are supposed to be built, particularly if you use the term workforce housing, and workforce housing has the connotation of referring to those people who work for the various Mormon church entities in Laie, people like people who work for HRI, people who work for PCC, people who work for the university, for example. I think some of the major questions were designed to elicit whether, if mortgages were made available for these houses, and part of the problem is that we don't have a number yet as to what these workforce houses are going to cost. But you can use imaginary numbers. You can say, well, if we built an affordable two-bedroom, three-bedroom house, for say the two-bedroom houses were $250,000. These are completely imaginary numbers. Or a three-bedroom house was $350,000. Well, how many people in the workforce were going to be able to qualify for a conventional mortgage? You know how that works. You got a house selling for $350,000. You want to buy it. So you go down and you fill out a form. And somebody makes an assessment as to whether you qualify for the mortgage. It was found that one of the things you have to disclose when you make an application for a mortgage is just how much income that you have that is going to bring you within the confines of being qualified. And it was found out as a result of a survey that was done that many people in Laie are living so close to the bone financially, partly because they don't make enough money, whatever enough is, and partly because, and here's the stunning part of this story, many people in Laie are in huge credit card debt. So when you plug into the equation of whether you are qualified for a mortgage or not, and you have to add in how much credit card debt you got, many of the people for whom these houses are supposed to be built, not all, but many of them, would not qualify. Now, let's say that you built out, however, well, they're talking about 450 or some number out there. That's a fluctuating number. You built these houses out there at whatever they finally decided that the houses are going to cost. They haven't disclosed them yet. I don't know when they're going to disclose them. But surely there's going to come a time when you have to, if you're going to sell something, you have to tell the buyer what the price is going to be. What if people who are in the Mormon Church entities workforce, what if they are found not to be, able to qualify for a loan for the amount that these houses are going to sell for? What do you do then? Do you then sell it to anybody? And you continue to have this housing problem in Laie? I mean, if you built houses and you can't sell them to people that you ostensibly said you're going to sell to because they are unqualified, they cannot meet the normal financing level that they have to meet in order to be able to qualify for a mortgage, then what do you do? You know where the problem also is? The other problem is the people for whom these houses are supposed to be built in Laie, they do not have a contractually enforceable arrangement so that these houses will be sold to them at a particular price. That troubles me. It ought to trouble any reasonable person who is looking at free market operations in terms of something that is as important as housing is. Mm-hmm. So all of these things taken together put a huge cloud over Envision Laie, particularly the housing segment. I think there's a huge cloud also over the issue, the dominant issue now, and that is the growth of BYU, Hawaii, and Laie, where the old number of 2,400 is no longer the ceiling, and they're looking at some figure that is going to double the size of that institution. Mm-hmm. So if you take all of these things together, we've got problems.
Right. Let me ask you, what would you propose, would like to see done immediately to address some of your concerns and other concerns of other members of groups?
Well, you know, some of the things that I would be concerned about is that having had the amount of formal education that I have, I'm very favorably disposed to the availability of educational opportunities for people who want them. But my difference with a lot of people who may have a similar ideological or value bent is that I think that BYU is being expanded as a business operation that is designed not to educate local people from the community, but to attract people from Southeast Asia particularly Southeast Asia. I haven't seen any figures lately as to where students from students attending the university come from. But not a small segment. I think a fairly significant segment comes from Southeast Asia. Some come from the Pacific Islands. The Pacific Islanders are important because they fit into the framework of a Polynesian cultural center, which is where Pacific Islanders get jobs, and then in turn, the money that they earn working for Polynesian cultural center gets recirculated gets recirculated into the university system, because the money that they get from working at these jobs at the Polynesian Cultural Center gets used for tuition and books and housing and so on and so forth. I would, if I were doing it, if I were President Wheelwright, which I am not, I would be a lot more forthcoming from the with the community. I would say, look, I'm president of this university. I'm, in fact, the liaison person. I'd come out up front and make a clean breast of it. I'm the liaison person talking to our principals in Salt Lake City. I want them to get the truth. I want you to tell me what your concerns are and what your alternative views are. And I want to receive those alternative views seriously, because I believe they are important. President Wheelwright has not made that kind of, taken that kind of public posture. I think what we need in Laie are confidence-building measures that are serious, that are committed, and that are rooted in reality, where people who have different points of view in the grand American tradition, that people who have different points of view get not only a fair hearing, you know, we need to move our public discourse away from shibai, from window dressing. You know, this business of, Mr. Smith, you've got 3 minutes or 1 minute if you're appearing before the council to say your bit, and then the chair of the meeting says, thank you very much for your testimony, next victim. That's nonsense. That is what one of the things that is degrading the public process in Hawaii. So I would like to see, first of all, a process that is pono, to use a Hawaiian expression. Unless the process is pono, unless it is serious, unless, and not all of this needs to take place in these silly public meetings that you have, where you come dressed up in a blue shirt or a green shirt or a pink shirt and you wave your sign around. None of that really works. I mean, it's interesting as window dressing and pseudo-drama. But I would like to see someone in a leadership position like President Wheelwright to seek out people in the community and get around a table and have a series of private meetings where people can be serious, can be taken seriously, and can advance serious, solid ideas. That is not taking place, and we're poorer for that. That is one of the reasons why, when you don't have that a process that is pono, process that is serious, where serious men and women can get around a table and talk, then you get these flawed kinds of decisions which later generations have to reject. So that's one thing that I would do. The other thing is, I would disclose what these affordable houses are going to cost. That is only fair. We're dealing with an open market. In an open market, you need as much disclosure as possible, particularly if you're going to buy a house. Now remember, a house is the most important asset that people hold in this country. Most people. The house becomes, your investment in a home becomes your principal asset. Now, if you don't know what a home is going to cost, how can you prepare to buy one? How can you seriously say that people who are saying they're going to build affordable housing, well, 1 minute they say it's affordable, the next minute they say it's workforce. We can't, reasonable people like me, reasonably intelligent people like me, say, how can you possibly seriously take this effort to build affordable or workforce housing if you don't tell me what the cost is? I think that's a big hole in the process. The other thing is that if you're going to expand BYU, maybe there's a good case for this, for reasons other than making BYU fiscally sound and fiscally safe, if that's a problem. And so far, we understand that that is a problem. It's been publicly disclosed by nobody else but the applicants for this development themselves. So if that's the reason, I want to see BYU become a premier institution for educating local people for jobs and for other reasons. I mean, we don't only get educated so that we can hold down a good job. To make us better people, in keeping with a lot of forward thinking that is going on in some universities throughout this country and throughout the world. But for BYU to expand in order to tap the vast resources of people who hunger for education in Southeast Asia and other people and other places around the Pacific Rim, I would want to take a good hard look at that before I'd want to build a university for that reason. I want to see local people have opportunities at BYU. I want to see relationships built with local people, relationships built with charter schools, relationships that are designed to develop relevance for what people in this state are going to need in order to survive into this century. I want to see education that is relevant for future generations. I want to contribute to that bank that we call intergenerational equity. I don't see any of this thinking going on. They want us to buy a pig and a poke.
Right. Well, some of the concerns of when we talk about affordable housing is,
yep.
and real quickly, the other issue is the neighborhood board, and I hope you can speak to that. Take a minute.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Speak to the neighborhood board, composition of the neighborhood board in a minute. But
yeah.
what I've learned, what can occur in city government, for example, that DPP and city government can do, they can require you to build and require you to have a certain amount of affordable homes.
Right.
They don't necessarily have to be in that immediate area. They could actually go down in Makakilo and purchase homes in an affordable, and that would satisfy the affordable homes, believe it or not. Case in point is the Coalina development, how things were done out there. And you can even buy back or pay out for the affordable home.
I made this argument with, to just shift grounds for just a minute, I made this argument with when one iteration of Envision Lahia, or one of its early iterations before Envision Lahia's Envision Lahia surfaced, there was a proposed mix of so-called market value houses and affordable houses, and the underlying economic theory is that you build market houses in order to subsidize the lower cost of affordable houses.
Mm-hmm.
My argument was that there is a place to build market houses. They don't have to be built in Lahia. That place is called Coalina. They can go buy some land down there and build some houses down there. But and the monies that would be generated by building market value houses down there could still be used to subsidize so-called affordable houses in Lahia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think partly for these reasons, the Mormon Church applicants who are pushing Envision Lahia, they have now backed away, it seems to me, and from the idea of building market value homes in next to the homes that are going to be so-called affordable. The other thing that happens, of course, and I don't know what the state of play is. There was a website for Envision Lahia, which someone tells me has now mysteriously disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the whole thing begins to smell. If you use the IRS smell test, when you look at Envision Lahia, you look at all the iterations that he has been through, you look at the attempt to confuse the public. For example, there was recently a big middle page splash in the local morning paper written by Pane Mea Tonga, whom I know quite well, and who is, for all practical purposes, an honest man. But I, when I read his article, I thought it was so patently thin that it was used more to disinform an unwary public than to inform.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those kinds of games don't speak well for an institution that has is pushing a university and is trying in a very fumbling way, trying to do something that I don't think is in the general long-term interest of the community.
Well, we're coming down to close of the hour, but if real quickly, the neighborhood board.
Yeah.
What is the composition? Does the
neighborhood board is basically, I think it's reasonably fair to say that the neighborhood board is dominated by church interests. There are a number of people who have who are directly employed by one of the church entities in Laie, and then there are a number of soft cells, and then there are people who have serious conflicts of interest. Junior Promacio, for example, longtime activist on the side of developers, sits on the neighborhood board. He's got a conflict of interest in that members of his family are trying to develop a development project down in the direction of Kahuku. He's been long involved in Kahuku community politics. He sits on the board. The membership of the neighborhood board on the windward side is just so skewed that none of these people really take seriously community views. The neighborhood board is a sad, sad story.
Well, anyway, so much to be said and talked about, but I appreciate you joining me, and we'll do this again. I just want to stay on top of this because many people talk to me and ask me, can you do something about it? And the reason is they only get 1 minute in the public meetings, and then they think the public meetings are tilted to favor the developer. So anyway, well, Dr. Anthony, thank you, and I appreciate you joining me.
Well, thank you, Carol, and I appreciate your receptivity to hearing a different point of view. And you do good work, and I appreciate it, and I hope that others will participate in an intelligent discussion.
Anytime, and we'll try to get the church to come and join us.
I look forward to that.
All right, thank you.
Goodbye.
Listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.
Miles, you go over 65 miles per hour.
This is KWAI, Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.